3 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you very much for letting me be part of your listening morning. Goodness sakes, we got a lot of stuff happening here on the commute today. We've got a number of updates for you regarding the Luigi Mangione case, accused murderer of insurance company executive Brian Thompson. I'll tell you something, Mangione, he is toast. But boy, are we learning some interesting things. We are learning that some prominent politicians, not just internet zealots, but prominent people in media, universities, and the United States Senate are all but rationalizing the murder of Mr. Thompson. We'll spotlight one senator in particular. In the state of Wisconsin, a schoolboy with dyslexia is being denied school support to help him with his dyslexia. They've got a program to help students having trouble reading, but the dyslexic student does not qualify and will not receive extra help on reading because he is white. There is now a lawsuit, as you might guess. And again, the war on woke continues. I just love the pushback, and we're going to see even more pushback after the election of Donald Trump, re-election of Donald Trump. All right, it got 5 minutes after 6 o'clock. You want to be with us in 2 hours because we have a very special guest. I've never done this before. And when you've been on the air for over a quarter century and you're doing something for the first time, that makes it pretty unique. Here's the deal. Late last summer, I finally owned up to the fact that I needed to lose weight, a lot of weight. I needed to lose 25 pounds. And I had been looking for the right kind of diet and had not found it because I was very picky. I wanted a diet where I wouldn't go hungry, where I wouldn't have to eat food that tastes like cardboard, where I would have to take, you know, drugs, injections, what have you. No, wasn't interested in doing that. I wanted a diet that was natural. I wanted to eat meat. And I didn't want to spend a lot of money like some of these diet programs that you go on. I found it. I found that diet. In the first 28 days I went on that diet, it's called the Fast Metabolism Diet. The first 28 days I was on Fast Metabolism, I lost almost 19 pounds. I have stayed on a variation of this diet for another 3 months, and I have lost an additional 8 pounds. So I'm not only down 25 pounds, I'm down 27 pounds. So now I think I need to lose 30. I'll try and lose another 5. But how did I do it? How does this diet work? Because again, you not only don't go hungry, you're all but ordered not to go hungry, because that can actually screw up the diet. Trying to go hungry can actually cause you to gain weight, because you'll go as long as you can, and then you'll start binging, and that's not good. You need to be in a rhythm, a regular ongoing program where you're eating throughout the day, and you're doing it in a way that speeds up your metabolism, which helps you take off weight quicker. The nutritionist behind this diet, her name is Haley Pomeroy. She's going to join us at 8:05 and is going to explain how I was able to lose all this weight. I waited for a while before I invited her on the show because, number one, I wanted to see if I could lose the weight in the first place. And second, once I lost the weight, I wanted to see if it would stay off or whether I would instantly start gaining the weight back. So by going on, like I said, a rendition of the diet, I have been able to lose even more weight. And you all know how active I am physically, but my schedule changed a lot during the COVID period, and I picked up an additional job as if doing a radio show wasn't enough already. Here's a secret. A lot of people in radio have a side. I have another whole job. And so not a lot of time to hit the gym. I lost the weight anyway. So stick around 8:05 if you're curious. You might get an early Christmas present here, a way to lose weight without going hungry. Oh, we have a lot of other things happening. I have to bring this to you. I love how the bubble wrap left is reacting to Donald Trump's victory. Let's go to Beverly Hills High School for a moment, where a school teacher is suing because some pro-Trump students held a rally marching through the halls carrying Trump banners supporting Trump, which she said was racist. This is from KTTV in Los Angeles.
This cafeteria in their mind.
This is her attorney speaking to reporters now.
Mind is somehow disgusting or dirty simply because there are black people eating there. That is the epitome of racism.
It was just mob of kids, just so many kids outside my door.
On election day, a group of students with MAGA hats and a Trump flag roamed down the hallway of Beverly Hills High School.
I may tell you how scary it was.
Teacher Bella Ivory says the group of students tried to enter her classroom where there were several black students.
Some of the students were shouting, "F- Kamala," as they walked down the hallway. The profanity towards our vice president, who is part black, combined with students congregating in front of my classroom, increased my fears and also the students' fears who were locked inside that room with me.
Bella's attorney has filed a formal complaint with the Beverly Hills Unified School District. He plans on filing a lawsuit next.
Of course, he needs to get paid. Go ahead, file all the suits you want. This is wonderful. On election day, first of all, I'm shocked that there's a bunch of high school students in one of the most liberal enclaves in one of the bluest states in the country, Beverly Hills, California. Beverly Hills High School, famous for the movie stars who have gone there as students. And, of course, for the offspring of celebrities as well. I am amazed that such a woke area actually had a bunch of students who were rallying on election day for Donald Trump and marching through the school, and this teacher freaks out. Now, if the students were saying F Kamala, okay, that's over the line, that's inappropriate. But notice how the teacher instantly goes to race. They were saying F Kamala to our vice president, who is half black. First of all, if a bunch of Kamala rally goers, if there was a rally in the school for Kamala, and they were saying F Trump, I don't think anyone would have even raised an eyebrow. I don't think anyone would have reacted as, no, that's unusual. That's unacceptable. I think a lot of people would have just shrugged. But when you have Trump supporters who are being loud and proud about it, all of a sudden, you know, several of the students in my class are black. They had to hear these kids rallying for Trump, carrying banners, saying mean things about the vice president. Oh, well, welcome to the real world. Welcome to what the world looks like when you have to listen to people who disagree with you. So I watched this story, this interview, a couple of times because I wanted to see, and I always ask the question, the same question when I'm looking at a story like this where the issue of race is brought up. How would I feel if everything was reversed? If a white teacher complained that a bunch of students were rallying for Kamala Harris and saying F Trump, and I have a bunch of white students in my class who had to hear that. He'd be laughed at. A teacher who would complain about that would be laughed at. So one of the differences I've noticed between 2024 and 2016, both in the run-up to Election Day and after the election, is that Trump supporters are a lot less bashful, a lot less shy, a lot less reticent, a lot less intimidated than they were 8 years ago. I mean, half a decade ago, we were seeing NFL players taking a knee during the national anthem. Now we're seeing NFL players doing the Trump dance. We're seeing other athletes, other sports doing the Trump dance. We're seeing other celebrities. George Strait, the country music singer, was going out on stage in Vegas. I think he's doing a residency in Vegas. And as he was walking out, he briefly did the Trump dance. People are saying, yeah, I voted for Trump. They're not, again, cringing. They said, well, I really voted against Kamala, so I had to vote for Trump. I said, yeah, I voted for him. Straighten things out. She broke it. He'll fix it. And to see this school teacher who's just not able to handle the fact that Trump was doing this. In Riverside, California, here's an interesting controversy. There is a boy who is on the girls' cross-country team. Of course, he identifies as female, says he's female. But that's all you have to do to compete on the girls' team if you're a boy. Just say you identify as a girl. And I mean, again, this feels so good because we never would have seen this a few years ago. Now we're seeing it break out all over the place. A bunch of school kids, mostly girls, started wearing a shirt that says there are only two genders. Keep girls' sports for girls. And you know how many? 150 kids started wearing that T-shirt. And of course, the school has reacted by saying that the students, I believe the principal, compared wearing a shirt calling for girls' sports to be for girls only to a Hitler T-shirt. Again, the immediate hysteria on the part of trans defenders. And the students, you know, are told you have to wear a coat. You can't show that. You have to put tape over it. They're made to look, the school district looks ridiculous, looks idiotic. And the kids are not backing off. I love this. You know, liberals are in the faculty lounge saying, I don't get it. Everything, you know, we've got woke faculty, woke staff, woke counselors. We've politicized the curriculum. We have a DEI office. Why aren't these kids being brought to heel? Why are these kids expressing all this conservative support? You know why? Because a lot of teenagers rebel. And if kids are going to rebel, they may as well rebel against idiocy, against unreasonableness. These kids are showing the courage that adults in that school building lack. The adults in that school building know it's utterly absurd and ridiculous to allow a boy to take away a girl's spot on the cross-country team. By the way, he hardly ever shows up for practice. But because he is so much faster, by virtue of the fact that he's a male, they give him a spot on the varsity. So a girl didn't make a varsity team because he wanted. Adults should know better. Adults should blow the whistle on this kind of abuse, this kind of nonsense. It's only when you complain that you force reticent, reluctant school officials and bureaucrats to take action. And what do you want to bet that's going to happen in Riverside, California? It's happening here in Washington State. The WIAA, that's the Washington Interscholastic Athletic Association, they basically proffer the standards and rules by which high school and middle school sports operate. There was a controversy when a boy from Eastern Washington won the state championship in the girls' 400 meters state track and field championship last summer. And people complained, and the girls would not congratulate him, and the crowd would not applaud for him. So now, this week, the WIAA announces they are changing their standards so that only girls can play girls' sports. Somehow, common sense is making a comeback. How about that? You got 21 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning. Philip J. Vandenberg III standing by the first social media sweep of the morning. Speaking of which, good morning. You're listening to The Commute with Carlson Talk Radio 570 KVI. 26 minutes after 6 o'clock. Love this song, especially with the scene in Home Alone where they're running through O'Hare Airport trying to catch their flight. Anyway, don't want to give it away. Home Alone. All
Spoiler
right.
Spoiler alert.
It has become part of the Carlson family tradition. We try and watch Home Alone every year.
Yeah, I've got an 11th grader, and he loves it. And I was kind of outside the window when this came out in the early 90s.
Yeah, Macaulay Culkin, what is he, about 67 years old now? I mean, it's the youthful charm's kind of wearing away there.
Yeah, I was too young to appreciate it as a kid. I was too old to appreciate it as a kid and too young to appreciate it as a parent. So, but for some reason, my 11th grader, he definitely is in the same category with you and your family there, John.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right. What's happening?
Wow. We've got a situation in Seattle that revolves around this lionizing of the suspect that's in custody, going to be charged with the murder of the United Healthcare CEO. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And this story comes by way of a Como News photographer who has just posted brand new video. And it's video that appears to be up on Aurora Avenue, where Aurora Avenue cuts next to Queen Anne Hill in Seattle. And it's one of these DOT reader boards that flashes out the messages about a lane closure or construction or one thing or another. But of course, it's been hacked or reprogrammed to give out this message. And the message says, one less CEO, many more to go. So somehow, some way, what looks to be a Seattle DOT road construction digital reader board has been manipulated with this message that seems to be in reference to the status of Luigi Mangione about to be charged with the murder of the United Healthcare CEO in New York City. And we talked about some of these stories the last couple of days where people are either praising or lionizing or saying that Luigi Mangione is a hero for allegedly killing a healthcare CEO.
And again,
so somebody in Seattle has hotwired this thing to change this message.
Yeah, I'll have more to say about this ugly phenomenon and what it reveals about the political left in this country.
Sure.
Because you talk, this is a real sickness that is out there,
yeah,
and it is on the political left. I compared yesterday what happened back in 2009 when a notorious abortion doctor, one of the few in the country who advertised that he would perform third trimester abortion, when he was killed. Yeah, there were a few, you know, crazies on the fringes, but the vast majority of pro-life sentiment was, this is awful, this is terrible, this is horrifying, this should never happen. And you're not seeing that on the other side here. You're you know, I'm going to be talking about Senator Elizabeth Warren, who's all but justifying it. And a fellow Democrat, John Fetterman, is basically, you know, are you out of your mind?
Yeah, he's been one of the few that has spoken with a voice of reason. One other quick story out of Seattle. Some good news on a salmon run. The handle My Ballard posted that over 1,500 salmon were counted on a single day last month, November, which is more than the total recorded during an entire spawning season since they began annual counts in 1987.
Wow.
So how's that for a restoration of salmon habitat run? They're at Carkeek Park,
yes,
just north of Ballard.
Our go-to guy on salmon recovery and restoration, Todd Myers, ought to weigh in on this. Again, that's good news, and you had to listen to 570 KVI to hear it. Bad news always gets headlines across the board, front page above the fold, but good news? Well, good news often goes unreported, except here. Excellent report, Philip J. 31 minutes. After 6 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Why a Wisconsin school district will not give reading support for a dyslexic student. You will not be pleased when you find out why. 37 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, in a festive mood here. But the news goes on, and man, there's a lot of it out there. You probably haven't heard this story yet, but a little boy in the Green Bay, Wisconsin school district, he goes to King Elementary School, has dyslexia, and the school has a program. In fact, the whole district there has a program to help students at the schools who suffer from reading problems to get extra help. And this boy happens to be dyslexic. So she signed up her son for getting some assistance, some extra help with reading. They said no. They said no, not because he doesn't really have a disability or because, you know, the mom's exaggerating his reading problems. They acknowledge he's got dyslexia. They acknowledge that he could be doing a whole lot better. But they also say that he's white. And the school success plan, as it's called, says that resources to help students read better are prioritized for, quote, First Nations, Black, and Hispanic students, close quote. The boy's mother, her name is Colby Decker, met with the principal, and the principal wouldn't budge. She said, would you ever give help to a white student who's having trouble reading? And he said, according to an interview she gave to National Review, the principal, quote, said that would never happen. She said, how come? The principal said, well, given the statistics that show white students performing higher than other students on average, well, it wouldn't make sense to provide resources to, quote, non-diverse, close quote, students. So because 14% of white students score advanced on the English language exam compared to 8% of all students, a student who happens to be the same race who is not reading well will not receive assistance because of his race. The mother said that there were other students who performed better than her son who are getting assistance. Guess why? Because they're not white. She said it was very clear that this principal heavily believes in DEI. That's diversity, equity, inclusion, but it's really divisiveness. She said, I told him, you're choosing equity. Why can't we do equality instead of just focusing on what students look like? The boy's been diagnosed with dyslexia for a couple of years. He started attending this elementary school last January. This school has refused to budge and help this boy with dyslexia for over a year because he is white. Throughout the year, the mom provided documentation, requested one-on-one reading intervention for her son. Again, they have a program to do exactly that for children who struggle with reading. He was placed on the waiting list for a less intensive program, but by the time he returned to school last fall, he was enrolled in a one-on-one intervention program, but it was conducted in small groups rather than one-to-one, and that's where he does best. And he is being treated differently, and they are denying him access to additional help because of his race. Well, finally, here comes the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. They have written a letter to the Green Bay Area Public School District and said, scrap this policy immediately. Start treating students as individual children, not as color-coded symbols of an equity agenda, or we will sue you. So this is their last chance. Again, this is not a state law. They say, oh, gee, we just have no choice, or it's not a federal law. And of course it wouldn't be. It's unconstitutional. But that is where that is where DEI takes you. This is the kind of thing that results from DEI, which is why it's so wonderful to see the school having to backtrack. And it's so good to see DEI policies being dismantled in corporations, organizations, and in schools across the country. It needs to happen more rapidly. And if the Trump administration uses its leverage at the Department of Education, that will happen. It can't happen soon enough. All right, it is 44 minutes after 6 o'clock in the morning, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570, KVI. A child sex trafficking sting in Renton has led to the arrest of a Seattle Public Schools assistant principal. Again, a Seattle Public School assistant principal. The assistant principal is supposed to be the disciplinarian at the school. That's usually how it works. The assistant principal gets to be the enforcer. But here we have a quick warning for you parents out there. Descriptions in this Como news story are about child sex predators. So if you have some very young ears in the car, probably turn down the radio for the next 45 seconds or so. Again, this is Como 4's coverage.
A former Seattle Public Schools assistant principal is among seven men arrested in a child sex trafficking sting in Renton.
Detectives posed online as children as young as 13 years old, who the men arranged to meet at a hotel for sex in exchange for cash and drugs.
Among those arrested, former Seattle Public Schools assistant principal Alexander Diaz Rios, who worked at TOPS K-8, but has since resigned. Police say Rios believed he was communicating with a 15-year-old boy.
According to Seattle Public Schools, the district placed Alex Diaz Rios on leave on November 13th after learning about the charges against him. Diaz Rios later resigned. The district claims it did not know until today that the case may have involved a child. It plans to make a referral to the state to review his license.
Come again? The district say they didn't know? Did they interview the guy? I mean, wouldn't that be the first or second question you'd ask him? What are you charged with? You would think that would be rather obvious. Anyway, Mr. Diaz Rios was the assistant principal at the Option Program at Seward. That's an alternative school, K-8, in the school district. As of yesterday afternoon,
And only until yesterday afternoon, his directory listing was removed. We'll have more details on this in a few moments here, but joining the conversation will be our good friend Lars Larson, our D3 host here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. 8 minutes to 7 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. Again, hat tip to our good buddy Ari Hoffman from the Post Millennial. That's his side hustle when he's not doing his great afternoon show. Great web news website, the Post Millennial. A Seattle vice principal among 7 men arrested during an undercover child sex trafficking operation. My good friend Lars Larson joins us now on the commute with Carlson. The teacher, Alex Del Rios, Lars Larson. By the way, Lars, do we have you? Do we have him punched up here? There you are, Lars. I'm sorry.
Okay. No worries. I do the same thing myself. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing fine. This is a real eyebrow raiser that this teacher, this assistant principal, which is supposedly supposed to be the disciplinarian.
Yep.
Entered into a separation agreement with the Seattle School District because he was arrested for prostitution, but it was only, and that happened in November, it was only when a law firm hired by the school district made public records requests that they learned that it was he thought he was making a sexual liaison appointment with a 15-year-old boy.
Yep. And this was, he was arrested in a sting back in September and then stayed on the job with the district unaware of the accusation.
One would think that they would have been notified. And one would think that they would have said, well, what have you been arrested for? What are you accused of doing? Mr. Del Rios is a member of the school's racial equity team. Here we go again, DEI.
Yeah.
Which states that the racial equity team is a, quote, key lever of mobilizing anti-racist impacts across the district.
And he's out allegedly trying to have sex with a child.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I guess I don't think a week goes by without hearing about somebody in education being arrested. This begins by the numbers to look bigger than even the Catholic priest scandal. Because there, the Catholic Church deliberately hid these people. I can't accuse the schools in this case of hiding it, although there are some other cases, one in my neck of the woods in Oregon, that in St. Helens, where the school district was aware of allegations of sexual misdeeds, crimes against children, and they sat on it for years.
According to Renton Police, what great work they did here. Good for you folks in the Renton Police Department. The majority of the undercover officers posed as juveniles age 14 to 15 online. Several of the adult male suspects, some of whom have prior child rape convictions, were taken into custody for trying to buy sex from a juvenile for up to $300. One of the defendants offered $75 plus methamphetamine to what he thought was a 14 or 15-year-old.
Now, here's the question I'd ask. Were the police, I mean, when the police arrest somebody, they'll book them in, they gather certain data about the person, name, you know, date of birth and all that. They may, and I would like to know, did they become aware that one of these suspects worked in education? Because at that point, the police are a mandatory reporter.
Yeah.
And at that point, you'd think the police would have fairly quickly identified the guy that, oh, you work at a school district. But I don't know whether they would have been aware of that information based on the basic information they would collect in an arrest.
Again, Mr. Alex Diaz Rios remained in the school district teaching assistant principal for over 2 months after his arrest. You don't want to miss Lars Larson any day of the work week from noon to three. When we come back, hour number two, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. What we have now learned about the alleged murderer of insurance company executive Brian Thompson. Hour number two, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Hope you are having a great Thursday. Hope you'll be having a great weekend ahead. We got a lot of stuff we got to talk about. Just yesterday, we played you an excerpt from an interview that Thomas Dickey, the attorney for accused murderer Luigi Mangione, 26-year-old, who police say shot and killed United Healthcare Insurance executive Brian Thompson. He gave an interview where he said he hadn't seen a speck of evidence suggesting that his client was guilty, and saying that he was going to fight extradition, arguing that his client should be out on bail, et cetera, et cetera. And I pointed out that there actually was quite a bit of evidence that suggests that his client was guilty and should be charged. Now, when you're charged, you're presumed innocent, but you're not presumed innocent when they're investigating you, okay? You follow the facts, and if the facts point to culpability, then you go on the assumption you've got the right guy. Now, you keep an open mind, of course, keep following the evidence where it takes you, but if more and more evidence lines up behind the same person, then you probably have the right guy. And if Mr. Dickey is looking for someone who is making his life difficult, it's not the NYPD. It's his client. His client was arrested in Pennsylvania at a McDonald's, and that's why he's fighting extradition. And now we know that the firearm that Luigi Mangione was in possession of when he was arrested matches the bullet casings found at the scene of the murder. Jessica Tisch, the NYPD commissioner, said police, quote, got the gun in question back from Pennsylvania. It's now at the NYPD crime lab. We were able to match that gun to the three shell casings we found in Midtown at the scene of the homicide. We're also able in our crime lab to match the person of interest's fingerprints with fingerprints we found on both the water bottle and the kind bar near the scene of the homicide in Midtown. It's going to make it a little more difficult to fight extradition, methinks. And again, much has been made of the fact that Luigi Mangione, who seems to be developing a cult following. People think that what he did was somehow heroic. Shooting a man in the back because he's a CEO was somehow heroic. And it turns out that Luigi Mangione is very much what you would call part of the liberal elite. Went to a very Tony private school called the Gilman School in Baltimore. Tuition, $40,000 a year. He also went to Ivy League school, University of Pennsylvania. That is Donald Trump's alma mater, and he happened to get both undergraduate and master's degrees in computer science. So he was blessed with good looks, good health, born into wealth, has never known a day of deprivation. His only suffering is that he's had a back injury that has aggravated him and annoyed him and caused him a great deal of pain from time to time. But he uses his money and his intelligence to figure out a way to kill someone. We keep hearing that Brian Thompson was insurance company CEO, but what do we know about his background? Well, Brian Thompson was not born into a family that owns several country clubs like Luigi Mangione. He grew up in Jewell, Iowa, population 1,200. His mom was a beautician. His dad worked at the nearby grain elevator. His high school graduating class had 50 students. Both he and, ironically, Luigi Mangione were class valedictorians in their respective classes. He played basketball in school, probably not hard to make the team. Again, 50 kids in the whole school. Played the trombone, worked in soybean fields, worked in meat processing plants during the summers. He did not go to an Ivy League school. He studied at the University of Iowa. That's where his girlfriend, he met his soon-to-be wife, with whom he would have a couple of kids. Most people say that he was very hardworking, very smart, a funny guy, and a thoroughly decent person. And yet, almost all the people in the news media who talk about Brian Thompson leave all that stuff out. We hear everything, all these tidbits and details about his killers, accused killers, background, childhood, how he moved to Southern California, and then eventually to Hawaii and then came back and all that. But not much about the virtual rags to riches. Brian Thompson was probably one of those guys who grew up poor and never felt poor, because it doesn't sound like his family's world revolved around money. I don't think Jewel, Iowa is where you go when you want to hit it big. So this is the American dream. And, you know, it wasn't, it's not like Brian Thompson was ever indicted or was identified for doing something particularly notorious. He just happened to be the head of the company and had been at the helm for about 4 years, actually attained the CEO status in his 40s. Elizabeth Warren, United States Senator from Massachusetts, issued a statement. Here's what she said. Violence is never the answer, but people can only be pushed so far. Oh, who pushed Luigi Mangione? She goes on to say that the killing represented a warning, quote, that if you push people hard enough, they lose faith in the ability of their government to make change, lose faith in the ability of the people who are providing the health care to make change, and start to take matters into their own hands in ways that will ultimately be a threat to everyone. Really, Luigi Mangione lost all that faith by the age of 26. This is a rationalization for what is happening. And, you know, I've got to contrast that with Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman. John Fetterman, very much a liberal Democrat, but recently I think he's been having second thoughts about what the hell is wrong with his party. First on the Palestinian issue, and then this issue. Fetterman says about Luigi Mangione, he's the blank hole that's going to die in prison. When asked about the people who are celebrating him online, which could almost now include his Senate colleague from Massachusetts, Fetterman said, a sewer is going to sewer. That's what social media is about. He also is less than impressed with how the media is carrying this forward. He says, I don't know why the media wants to turn that into a story with these trolls saying these kinds of things anonymously. He says, remember, Brian Thompson has two children that are going to grow up without their father. This is vile. And if you've gunned someone down that you don't happen to agree with their views or the business they're in, you know, I'm next. They're next. He's next. She's next. Good for him for saying that. Elizabeth Warren is an embarrassment. She's shrill. She is one of the reasons, I guess she's not all bad, she's one of the reasons that the Democrats lost so badly in 2024. Because Elizabeth Warren ran for president in 2020. And let's remember that she was running to be the most liberal, and Kamala Harris said, oh no, no one's going to get to my left. And so Kamala Harris was doing silly things like talking about why taxpayers should pay for sex change operations for illegal aliens who are in prison. People say, oh, come on, they haven't actually done that. No, that's what she said. It's on tape. They ran tape as part of the commercials they ran against. They ran the tape of her saying that taxpayers should pay for this. So part of that was Elizabeth Warren. She also had outsized impact on the Biden White House. And it was Elizabeth Warren who would tweet out nonsense like black trans and cis women, gender nonconforming and non-binary people are the backbone of our democracy, close quote. Okay, someone who could say that and not be laughed out of the United States Senate is someone who is doing serious damage to her own party. Because, again, they wouldn't call her on her own shrill extremism. That's what is her, that's what hurt the Democratic Party in 2024. It's not only why Donald Trump won, it is why the Republicans maintained their hold on Congress. Remember, all the statisticians and all of the pollsters were telling us that the Democrats stood a 73 to 80% chance of keeping the House. They didn't keep the House. The Republicans not only won the Senate, they won it with an extra senator or two than they thought. They very nearly ended up not with 53 senators out of 100. They almost ended up with 55. That is because people are not only turning their back on Kamala Harris and Joe Biden, they're turning their back on what's become of the Democrat Party. So Elizabeth Warren, in an odd kind of way, was a friend to the Trump campaign, just as Pramila Jayapal was a friend to the Trump campaign. Didn't mean to be, but the impact she had definitely ended up tilting the electorate away from her party toward Donald Trump. It is 7:20 in the morning on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. Vandervoort, the third, right around the corner. The social media sweep straight ahead. Good morning. Yeah, let's stick with Bing Crosby on this one. All right.
Philip J. Vandervoort. I'm telling Eric Clapton, you said that.
Eric Clapton is not bringing the Christmas vibes. No. Eric, with his blues guitar.
Why don't you just start playing the guitar? Leave the singing to other people here on a song like that. All right. What is going on? You know, we ought to do this sometime between now and Christmas. Mm-hmm. Find the most un-Christmas-like Christmas song.
Okay.
The song that does the most to not put you in the Christmas spirit.
Stick around for the 8 a.m. hour. I have some things in mind.
Some nominees.
Beautiful. We'll get the process going here. Philip J. Vandervoort III, what is going on right now?
How about Bob Ferguson on social media? This is the, yes, governor-elect in the state of Washington. Social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort, but it revolves around the legal rulings against grocery store merger between Kroger and Albertsons. And Bob Ferguson on his social media account on X posted, "Breaking. We stopped a mega monopoly between two grocery store giants that would have increased food prices and put Washington jobs at risk. This is a win for affordability and jobs. The judge ordered Kroger and Albertsons to reimburse our office for the cost of bringing the case. I'll continue fighting monopolies that cause your costs to go up and reduce your choices." Ooh, just a little tone deaf there.
We'll see what happens.
And, you know, so here's Bob Ferguson, who isn't worried about the cost of groceries going up when it's essentially a function of the state cranking up energy prices on gasoline or diesel, but he's quick to go to court and then claim victory that he's doing something to save grocery store prices or improve grocery store prices and all this. And I mean, in the area where I live in North Seattle, I've seen an Albertson store close in the last handful of years. I've seen a QFC store close in the last handful of years. I haven't seen a lot of grocery stores opening up. So if the status quo is supposed to mean that there's going to be more competition, why do I tend to see grocery stores closing rather than opening? And what I'm trying to get at is by blocking this merger, you're just going to see more grocery stores close, probably on behalf of both companies.
That's my concern.
Yeah.
Now, you would have had some closures, some mergers anyway, as two competing stores within a certain distance might just streamline. But no, what is being left out of this story is that Kroger, Albertsons, QFC, they are trying to deal with the new realities of competition from the food behemoths. Yeah. The gargantuans,
like the Walmarts,
the Costcos, the Amazon. That's what they are now trying to do. And it ain't easy. Yeah. And so I understand why they wanted the merger. I understand the populist appeal of opposing it. But my concern is that at the end of the day, we're now going to see shades of Rite Aid, a lot more closures.
Yeah, / Bartels, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last hour.
Well, yes. Rite Aid.
Bought. Bartels.
Now we have less of both.
Yeah, ended up having to close some down. So last hour we told you about the Seattle Department of Transportation, at least it appears to be a Seattle DOT digital reader board that had been reprogrammed to send out a message in support of the murder of the United Healthcare CEO in New York. If you want to see the video that was posted by the Como News photographer that we found and I was talking about last hour, you can check out the KVI handle. We've got it posted there now at KVI Seattle. You can see the message that says, "One less CEO, many more to go," flashing on this digital reader board as drivers in Seattle drive past it. Then one political note, Seattle Times political reporter Jim Bruner updated that the outgoing state senator Mark Mullett, who ran unsuccessfully for governor in Washington, is going to end up running for Issaquah mayor.
Yep.
So that's going to be a new path forward for Mark Mullett. And then lastly, the Babylon Bee has this headline, brace yourself, Rudolph changes name to Rolanda, dominates female reindeer games.
It's all that gay apparel.
And they grabbed a screenshot of the classic Rankin and Bass, Rudolph Saves Christmas.
Yes.
Reindeer that's made out of felt or whatever they did stop action with, and just put kind of a new wig on Rudolph there.
Right.
Use that classic Rankin and Bass imaging there in their gag.
All right. Very cool. Very nice. When we come back on the John Carlson Show, an exclusive interview Change Washington has with Dow Constantine reveals that he doesn't even seem to know how much money he has spent on homelessness, either collectively or annually. This is going to be very interesting. Jim Keough with Change Washington joining us to tell us what else Dow Constantine reveals during this interview. Right around the corner, 25 minutes to 8 o'clock on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Good morning. Well, Dow Constantine doesn't give a lot of interviews, but he gave one to Change Washington. And it was a pretty extensive interview, apparently an online interview. And the guy responsible for making it happen, Jim Keough from Change Washington, joins us this morning on the commute with Carlson. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, John. How you doing, sir?
I am doing well. First, tell our listeners about Change Washington.
Well, Change Washington is a nonpartisan group made up of Republicans and Democrats and independents that is seeking to reverse many of the extreme policies that have taken over in the Puget Sound area over the past decade. Everything from crime and drugs and taxes. We were an extreme political entity here for a long time, and we've seen that the damage of all of that, and we're seeking to bring some moderation back to our policies.
How do you do that?
Well, you know, the first thing is to elect moderates. You know, here in Seattle, we had an extreme city council that passed massive extreme policies. Well, in 2023, moderates came back, and six new members joined the Seattle City Council. And as we have seen, moderation has been the word and instead of extremism from the Seattle City Council since then.
Yeah, no, they are a welcome contrast to the Washington State Legislature. The House of Representatives, the State Senate, if anything, are growing more extreme, even when it's clear that the public mood is not moving in that direction. And the city of Seattle, the most liberal part of a very blue state, even they now are moving, not they're not at the center, but they're moving toward the center from where they were.
Exactly. You know, progressive promises sound fantastic, but put into reality, they're not. And people who live under those policies come to realize it, and they fight back, and they throw out the extremists and bring back moderation.
Okay, you land this interview with Dow Constantine about homelessness, because, yeah, as you point out, nobody has been more involved in more facets of how to deal with homelessness in King County than Dow Constantine. He was the guy who declared the emergency and the need to address the housing and homeless issue. He is the one who led the effort to form the King County Regional Homeless Authority. He is the one who spent hundreds of millions of dollars to convert former hotels around the county, over a dozen of them, into 1,600 supportive housing units, et cetera, et cetera. So what did you learn from Dow Constantine, and did he learn anything from you?
Well, we don't know what they've learned from us, obviously. But, you know, the one thing that kind of struck us when we got back the responses from the executive's office was simply the lack of accountability, you know, both in terms of money spent in the past and goals for what we are spending our money on for the future. We asked a very simple question, and this came from former Democratic Senator Rodney Tom, who is the chair of our board. And the question is, okay, you declared homelessness an emergency in 2015. Can you give us an estimate of how much money has been spent annually since that time? They came back and said, no, we can't. We don't know. They came back and they told us, you know, we're going to give this amount of money to the King County Regional Homeless Authority. Well, that's a very small part of it. So we don't know how much money has been spent in the past. We then asked, okay, we've done this reorganization of the King County regional homeless authority. What are the goals that taxpayers can expect to see with the money that we're spending on that? What are the aims? What do we need to do to make this a success? We got back nothing in terms of a strategy, a plan, you know, a goal. And so, you know, we don't know how much money we spent, and we don't know what our goals are. What's the accountability? And then we look at this and we go, why is the homeless problem still so severe and it's growing? Well, we just don't have accountability within our system. No one is responsible. You know, if you were to say, you know, come election day, you know, I want to see homelessness decrease. Well, who do you vote for or against? We don't know who's responsible. And that's what kind of comes about, is we simply don't have accountability with this issue.
Well, you pointed out in your questioning that homelessness has grown despite, at this point, billions of dollars being spent on homelessness to combat homelessness. Homelessness has actually increased 63%. When Dauch issued his emergency declaration about what a crisis homelessness had become, there were about 10,000 homeless. Now there's over 16,000. And, of course, between 22 and 23, in those two calendar years, 2,300 people died from drug overdoses in King County, many on the streets. 2,300 people. It's astonishing. And Dow's response is, quote, homelessness is at its core a housing issue. The numbers reflect we've not created enough housing to keep pace with a growing need, close quote. Someone want to tell me why we don't see these roaming street vagrants looking like zombies because they're so high, so out of it, or coming down from a high in Kirkland? Why you don't see them in Renton, anywhere close to what you see in downtown Seattle? So he thinks, it's, well, if we just build enough housing, we're not going to have these housing problems. That has got to be one of the most street stupid things I've ever heard a politician say. You've got a you've got someone who's just in clear denial. And by the way, one thing that is very obvious from your interview with Constantine is that if you want to say one person is more to blame than anyone else for the state of homelessness in King County, oh, it is him. Far and away, it is him. Go ahead.
No, without a doubt. And, you know, the problem kind of boils down to, you know, the strict adherence to housing first policy, which is the liberal mantra. And what housing first says is give everybody a house, then we'll take care of their problem, or give them housing. Well, what we're finding here is that we provide people with shelter in the temporary housing and the emergency housing, and these places have are just filled with drugs, crime, and violence. You know, we helped produce last summer a documentary called Behind Closed Doors, in which Jenny Burton, who many people know about, did this fantastic documentary on what is happening inside these housing developments. And it's horrendous. You know, everybody, you know, 90% of the people are using drugs. Violence is happening on a random basis. Police are constantly being called there, police and ambulances.
Yeah.
They're taking up a heck of a lot of our resources. And people who come in and say, we want help with our drug addiction, with our mental illness, the staff is unable to help them. They have nowhere to go to get help. And so the problem just worsens and worsens. And all we have done is we've taken the problems that are out on the street, given them a roof, but still, the problems are still there. And, you know, that's not the way to solve the issue. We need to go at the core issue, which is drugs and alcohol and mental illness treatment.
So why is he still banging the it's all about housing drum?
Well, you know, you have to ask him that. You know, you can be skeptical and say, well, you know, building a large home housing bureaucracy is beneficial to one political party versus another. You can be skeptical and believe that. This interview doesn't erase any of my skepticism.
Jim Keough is with Change Washington, the organization that scored this interview. By the way, real quickly, last question. Explain Plymouth Housing to our audience and what its track record is. They happen to manage and run many of these new low-barrier shelters and hotels converted to homeless hotels?
Yeah, they've done that. I'm not so much of an expert on Plymouth. You know, I do know that they were very involved with the situation up in Kenmore that fell through. They tried to make a proposal for a housing development up there, and it fell through at the last minute because of broken promises. They then immediately went to Redmond and are now working on a housing project in downtown Redmond.
Right, but they are involved with several, and Jonathan Cho has taken a video camera in to some of these facilities, which are either new or newly restored, and they look like drug dens.
Oh, they are, yeah. And it's the documentary that we did with Jenny Burton has a couple of residents from Plymouth Housing facilities. And you're right, you know, drugs are rampant, violence. And, you know, one of the things that people forget is that when you put all these people together in one building, you make them easy prey for those who prey on people who are desperate. You know, drug dealers and crime bosses and that type of stuff. And you put them all into one location. It just makes the problem even worse.
Jim Keough with Change Washington. If people want more information, where do they go?
They go to changewashington.com.
Changewashington.com. That's changewashington.com. Check it out. It is coming up on 7:48, 12 minutes to 8 o'clock. And again, special interview at 8:04. How is it that John Carlson managed to lose over 25 pounds and keep it off without going hungry and without having to spend a ton of money? We will tell you how it all happened. Again, that's after your 8 o'clock headlines as the commute continues. Coming up on 7 minutes to 8 o'clock, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI.
Enjoy this good Christmas song, because the next hour, you're not getting any of them.
We have Christmas songs that aren't such great Christmas songs.
And the listeners have provided me with some real gems.
Yeah, KVI listeners are coming through with bad examples.
Beautiful.
Good examples of bad songs, I guess.
Good examples of bad Christmas songs at 206-421-5757. Text your comments, 206-421-5757 on the KVI comment line. Don, KVI listener in Kent. John, listen to your discussion about the court-imposed blocks to the so-called merger between Kroger's and Albertsons. This ruling will not help with Kroger or Albertsons. My trip to a Fred Meyer yesterday showed that some prices have already started climbing big time. Was amazed to see the price of a plain 18-pack of Kroger eggs now costs $7.89. Short while later, bumped into a dairy stalker named Colin at the store, who warned me, "Don't look at the price of eggs. It's $7.79 now. No, worse than that, it's $7.89. Colin burst out laughing, said they must have jumped another 10 cents overnight. Another casualty of these court rulings will probably be the corporate parents closing of some of the older supermarkets like QFC and Albertson. Well, that is very possible and very likely, because we're not addressing the new reality that these supermarkets, these are the stores that made it tougher for small grocery stores to be in business. But now the monster grocery stores like Costco, Walmart, Amazon are making it harder for them. Also, from Mike, listening to us in Rancho Mirage, California, at KVI.com, where the reception is always pitch perfect. It says, Dow Constantine is a good example of the adage, success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. And yes, with the failure of the county's homeless policies, looking around, blaming, gee, many things. Who knows why? When, in fact, it's because of your terrible policies. When we come back on the John Carlson Show, I needed to lose 25 pounds. I found a way to do it, which was so unique that I've decided to share it with you. Stand by. It's a very interesting segment we have coming up on The Commute with Carlson. Okay, we have just launched our most annoying Christmas songs of the season, and this has got to be a contender, Zach.
Well, I was starting at the bottom. I'm going to work my way up. That's how bad it's going to get.
Oh, boy. Okay, what's the name of this one?
Nuttin' for Christmas.
Okay, and I hope I never hear it again. Nuttin' for Christmas. All these songs charted. All these songs were recorded.
Yeah, this one charted. I was reading about it. I think charted when it first came out with 5 different artists.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Anyway, we have a very special guest joining us here on the John Carlson Show. Something I haven't done much in 25 years is talk about my weight, because I'm
an outdoors guy, very active, mountain climber, all that. But late last summer, I found myself having to lose 25 pounds. And I started looking for a diet because I needed to change the way I was eating, but I didn't want to go hungry. I didn't want to eat food that tastes like cardboard. I didn't want to take any kind of, you know, drugs, injections, or anything like that. And I didn't want to spend a lot of money like some of these diet programs. My son found it for me, a book called The Fast Metabolism Diet, which has actually been around for a while, by Haley Pomeroy, nutritionist Haley Pomeroy. Lose up to 20 pounds in 28 days. I didn't believe it, but I decided to try it, 28 days, and I wouldn't go hungry, and I could eat delicious food, including beef, poultry, fish, all that good stuff. And I lost 19 pounds in 28 days. And I've stayed on a variation of the diet ever since, and I've lost another 8 pounds. So I'm down 27 pounds on this diet where I don't go hungry and I eat delicious food. Haley Pomeroy, welcome to the John Carlson Show. How did this happen?
Thank you so much for reaching out and telling our team your story. It's so cool and inspiring. And like you said, the diet's been around for a long time. I've been in clinical practice for 30 years. And what our goal is to heal the metabolism, to speed up the metabolism, because men and women, right, we get a little bit older, we have stress, you know, all of those things. But we also have to realize our food is very different now than, you know, 10, definitely 15 years ago. So we use food really strategically. It's what I do in the clinic all the time to sculpt these amazing bodies. We use food strategically, delicious food, right, to burn fat for fuel. Like, that's my whole goal. It's fat is a gold mine. If you have 20 pounds to lose, like, I want it, and I want to convert it to energy.
Interesting, because this morning I had an egg white omelet with spinach and sausage and mushrooms, but no cheese, because that's a no-no, as you're going to explain to us in a moment. And then for a snack, I have roast beef lettuce wraps with mustard. I mean, again, I'm not going hungry. The food is good, but you say it's all about eating targeted foods on specific days.
Yeah, so I think people forget that what we burn, whether we, you know, burn our bone, like people that have osteoporosis, or we burn our muscle, people that have, you know, visceral fat or fatty liver disease or midsection weight gain, right? We burn our, you know, stress hormones, our adrenal hormones, our adaptive hormones, or we burn fat for fuel. All of those decisions in our body from a metabolism perspective are nutrient dependent. So what I've done over 30 years is I've taken all of the nutrients, the micronutrients, not macro, like how many grams of protein you eat, right? But the micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, enzymes are precursors to our hormones in foods. And I've mapped it out so that we follow the body's natural circadian rhythm. We follow the body's natural rhythm. So you mentioned today's a Thursday. You're doing a lot of lean protein and alkalinizing vegetables. But in the beginning of the week, you start out with a lot of complex carbs. So it might be oatmeal and mangoes and watermelon and cherries and chili. We make a ton of different variations on chili. And then later in the week, we do the healthy fats. So you're doing, you know, almonds and cashews and avocados. Lots of, you know, darker meat if you're doing chicken. So we rotate through the week strategically through the day to use nutrients that are more conducive to burning fat. So the unhealthy way that people are doing this is two ways. Things like keto, which forces the body to burn fat at a nutrient deficit, right? That's why everybody gains a bunch of weight back. And ultimately, it's not a positive impact on the health. Or even with Ozempic and the GLP-1, right, we are forcing our body to take enhanced insulin uptake. So we can force this metabolic pathway, or we can feed this metabolic pathway. So I want to burn fat, but I want to, you know, lose weight, but I want to improve health. So, you know, I've been doing this for 30 years. My clients, I have three generations of clients. We have millions of pounds logged for weight loss in our app. We have a free app, right? You can actually use food. You can eat more food to lose more weight. And I love what you said about not being hungry. Every time you're hungry, the body slows the rate of burn. And so we want to feed stress, not strip our bodies and force it to lose weight. We want to nourish it and have it be in a situation like yours where you just can't help but lose weight, right? You wanted 25, you got 28, 29 by eating.
Yeah. No, by eating. Now, there are trade-offs. For instance, nothing from refined, again, it's a 28-day diet, and once you succeed, once you stick with it and you're true to it, your preferences change. You don't have the cravings for certain types of foods that you had before. So
The things you don't crave are things that aren't food, right? I don't even know how we are legally allowed to call those food, right? When we talk about yellow number 5, red dye, blue dye, they have no business in nutrition. They are banned in every other species but the human species. If you have an animal in captivity, I work for the Denver Zoo, the Zoo in Nebraska in formulation. I've worked in endangered species formulation. I've worked in human supplement formulation. It is illegal to put those things in any other species except for the human species in the United States. So you're right, you do without, but you do without things that should never be in your food.
So you don't eat foods made from refined sugars. So,
right.
You know, stay away from a lot of the baked goods. Stay away.
I have over 48 cookie recipes on my website. You can have cookies and bread and pasta. You just use whole grain. People have a hard time sometimes making whole grain taste good. That's why we've sold in 47 languages. But one of the biggest things for me that was such a cool accomplishment was in Spain and in Italy, our cookbooks sold on their best, what they consider their best sellers list. You don't ever get a diet book on a best sellers list in countries that are food focused. But our food is so good and so delicious that we have sold in Italy, in Spain, in Mexico, in Korea, all over the world, because those places focus on real food, right? So diet means, did I eat today? You know, I have people that are in the NFL. I have people that are in Major League Baseball, people that are in front of the camera. Every Oscar, we've had clients that have the Oscars, Grammys, Emmys, you know, all of those things which have to have high performance. So their world focus on, like, I have to be in a high performance status. I think everybody forgot about all of the stress that we're under requires you to have that kind of eating, like you're in a high performance status. However, that can be expensive and it can be really hard to attain. So we have recipes that are super inexpensive, delicious, easy to make. I want you to fill your freezer with foods you've packaged instead of packaged foods. And the cool thing is we have this amazing membership community. Like, everybody's posting what they're eating. They're traveling on a plane. They're stuck. I just did a whole thing on, I went to a doctor's appointment. We take you through how to prepare for a doctor's appointment. All of those things in our membership is so that people don't do it alone. I've been in clinical practice for 30 years, right? And one thing that I realize is that if you're going to heal the body and be successful, you need help. And now, probably more than ever, right, with everything that you're bombarded with. But I just want everybody to know that you can absolutely turn towards food for weight loss. Like, you do not have to do without.
It's called the Fast Metabolism Diet, online at thefastmetabolismdiet.com. The person behind the Fast Metabolism Diet is nutritionist Haley Pomeroy. I will tell you, I have gone on this diet, and I waited to book Haley because I wanted to make sure that, A, the diet would work, and, B, that it would stay that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, it has 19 pounds doing the 28-day diet, and then another 8 pounds since then on a variation of it.
Because it speeds up your metabolism. Like, all those people that can eat and they eat anything and they don't gain weight, they have a fast metabolism. So if we don't heal the metabolism, you will forever be doing without or some crazy diet, right? So, you know, I do, like, I want to capture a big chunk that first 28 days. But honestly, and this, say this between you and I, the funnest part of my career of 30 years is, like, the after, right, where people go, like, what you just said to me. I mean, you called us. I'm so grateful you called us. But and I lost another 8 pounds. Everybody rebounds and gains a ton after these crazy diets. But if you're speeding up your rate of burn, you can be like those people that just don't gain weight when a margarita accidentally falls in your mouth, right?
Accidentally. again, folks, it worked for me. And when it did, I said, I got to share this with the listeners. I want them to know this can happen. It's the Fast Metabolism Diet. And a free copy is waiting for you at HaleyPomeroy.com. That's HayLie Pomeroy, POMROY, HaleyPomeroy.com/free book. They'll send you one. That's all I had to go on, is this book with the recipes. They're so good, the recipes, that the rest of my family ended up eating your turkey chili and your pasta and several of the other dishes that you had simply because they taste good.
Of course, yes. No, we have lasagna and roast and pasta and egg bites and, you know, we can teach you how to make bars, how to make bread. So nutrition is the only conversation that should be being had, and not eating has no place in the nutrition conversation. You know, everything we do, especially when hormone fluctuations or stress hormones or people aren't sleeping, right? It takes nutrients to rebalance the body. And all of the meals that we have in there, I've made every single one. Our cookbook, we have two cookbooks. They hit the New York Times bestsellers list too, which is really exciting because I'm not, you know, it's a cookbook about nutrition. A lot of times people don't want to hear about that, but it tastes amazing. It tastes delicious. These are things that you can bring to a dinner party. You can incorporate into your world. You can feed your kindergartner. The thing that breaks my heart is when people go on a diet and it's nothing they would, if you don't feel proud to send your kindergarten to school with the food that you're eating to heal a body in need, you shouldn't eat it.
Mm, great advice. Really good practical advice. Haley Pomeroy, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for this diet because, you know,
we don't get enough men talking about it. So I appreciate you having me on. You know, men, it is hard. Men have this tendency to visceral fat, which is so dangerous, right? But also they get that, you know.
That's the fat that covers the organs, right?
Right, it does. And men are so prone to it. And this is so targeted for that. And so our men have a phenomenal success. I will tell you, usually they're dragged in by, you know, a partner of theirs or something. But then we get all these really cool pictures, which we love. So I was just so honored that you called, and I really appreciate it. And we want to do this for your listeners. And you're not alone. When you go to the website, you can join a free membership for 30 days too and ask your questions. Like if you are diabetic or if you don't have a gallbladder or, you know, there's things that make you uniquely you. And that's why we have the membership. And I, you know, when I decided to do the books, I was not out to write a book. I had been in successful clinical practice. But one of my clients, actually the guy that produced Juno and 500 Days of Summer and many other amazing movies, he was so on me to write a book because he's like,
oh, I'm glad you did. That's all I had to go on was your book with all the recipes in the back and a very, very wonderful mother-in-law who helped prepare and make sure I stayed on using the right ingredients. But my visceral went from 16 to 9.
Wow. See that? I mean, I'm so happy for your scale, but that, like your whole world, your life, all of us listeners, all of that are so lucky because that's such a risk factor and it's such a terrible risk factor in men. From, what did you say, from 19 to?
From 16 to 9 in 60 days.
16 to 9. There is not a drug on the market that can do that.
Right. Without drugs, this was all eating natural, delicious foods on the fast metabolism diet. Haley Pomeroy, sure is nice meeting you, even if only by phone.
nice to talk to you anytime. Call me anytime. It's just a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
Now that I've gone through it, is there any kind of regimen that I should take from here on in?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to send you a Metabolism Revolution book. The whole is like a revolution, right? It's about, you know, focusing on the metabolism. The whole second half of that book is called A Fast Metabolism for Life. And in that book, I go through scenarios like you're getting ready to run, you know, a marathon or a mud runner, or you just had a car accident and you have to have surgery. Or you partied like the rock star you would always wish you were, or, right, you go through menopause. Like when things happen, how to feed your body back to health really fast. I'll shoot that over to you. But on our website, I have, I just posted one today about, you know, feeding your face. Like, what do you eat, right, to increase? Like, especially with the weight loss, we want to tighten up collagen and elastin and give yourself that nice glow.
Okay.
And you know, we have everything. So I write constantly blog posts on that. I constantly do podcasts on those kinds of things. But the whole section, Metabolism Revolution, right, which is like once and for all, learn. Like, I want you to have all the tricks on how I spin food to get someone to run faster, jump higher, right, from an athletic perspective, to emote health for anti-aging. Mm-hmm. All of that is in that second half. It's called Fast Metabolism for Life.
I'm looking forward to that. Haley Pomeroy, thank you so much. The Fast Metabolism Diet, a free copy waits for you at HaleyPomeroy.com/free book. HaleyPomeroy.com/free book. The John Carlson Show continues. Talk Radio 570 KVI. Philip J. right around the corner. Haley, thanks again. Have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, and thank you so much for reaching out.
You got it. It is 8:23 in the morning. Again, it's annoying Christmas songs.
Worst Christmas songs?
Worst Christmas songs. We've got a great list. This is William Shatner. No, I'm not joking. Captain
Kirk. This is a guy who can sing.
Yeah.
This is William Shatner.
This is William Shatner, apparently during happy hour recording this one.
A margarita just fell into his mouth accidentally, I'm told.
Or seven.
That's right. There's someone who could use Haley Pomeroy right about now. All right. What do you got going, Phil?
I got socialists on social media. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. We'll start with a state senator in California who's going after Elon Musk, you know, popular target, Scott Weiner.
Oh, from Bay Area.
Yeah.
He is a trans fanatic.
Okay.
Transgender ideology fanatic.
Yeah. Social media profile says passionate about healthcare, climate, making it easier to build housing, transit, clean energy, Democrat. And he posted Elon Musk has long hated public transit, which he thinks carries a bunch of serial killers. He instead wants everyone to drive a car, preferably a Tesla. Now he has government power,
idea.
I think based with the Doge connection to the Trump administration, mm-hmm. is trying to kill off California's high speed rail project.
Good.
It's called killing off the competition. Well, I don't know if it's killing off the competition or is the California high-speed rail project so convoluted and fiscally unsustainable that it kills off itself. Perhaps that's one answer for this state senator.
No, first of all, this was supposed to be the L.A. to San Francisco run,
right?
Which isn't even close to happening. So they're building it out in the desert, the area least likely to carry, and it's still many times over the budget
cost
of what was supposed to be the completed line. So, no, if you want a monument to rival Sound Transit for huge, humongous waste of money.
Yeah, but a larger scale.
Much
exponentially larger scale.
And it's not carrying anybody. Yeah. It's just out in the desert. So, yeah. And you notice that Elon Musk used to be a liberal hero because it's Teslas or e-cars. But, gee, not anymore, is he?
Greta Thunberg, the teenage, now almost young adult climate activist.
How dare you?
Yeah, has been captured on video at some sort of a press conference type situation. She's with other people, but she's on the microphone. You're going to hear her say, expletive Germany and expletive Israel. She's wearing a keffiyeh. There is a keffiyeh on the table that's kind of serving as a table for the press conference, and there's a large banner behind her that says Palestinians, and it has a Palestinian flag on it. Here are the words that Greta Thunberg speaks to the crowd.
What'd she say?
And Israel.
Oh. F Germany and F Israel on the crowd. Sadly, predictably, cheers. But there's the young climate activist who ostensibly
she's really made something of her life.
Anti-Semitic.
Yeah, I'm glad she's got some range. You know, it's not just climate anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. Diversifying her political portfolio.
Not just infantile views about climate, which is justifiable when you're 13.
Mm-hmm.
But now about Israel, it's the same mindset. You'll notice it's the same people who are fanatical about Hamas are also going to be fanatical about climate.
Yeah, right. There's that intersection.
So not all that surprising. It is coming up 8:32, The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. People saying, hey, where do I get that free book? Which I did not know she was going to offer. So this is an early Christmas present for KVI listeners. It's Haley, H-A-Y-L-I-E, Haley Pomeroy, P-O-M-R-O-Y, HaleyPomeroy.com/free book. And she'll send you the copy of the book I'm looking at right now, the one I used on my diet, the Fast Metabolism Diet. Only want you to know about it because I did it and it works. And I said, I want other people to have the benefits of my experience here. All right, it's 8:32. All right, we're throwing in worst Christmas songs ever. Yes, this is a Christmas tune.
Of sorts.
From a band that maybe should stay away from Christmas songs.
Yeah, there were no fans going, what about that AC/DC Christmas song? Yeah. We've been waiting a long time for this.
You know, I mean, there's a reason why crooners tend to do better with Christmas season music than Smash Mouth heavy metal bands. All right. You've got 39 minutes after 8 o'clock. It was a very interesting piece in the Seattle Times, an interview that Nina Shapiro, who's been there a long, long time, used to write for the Seattle Weekly. She interviewed three Democrat members from the Washington delegation about what's to become of their party. How are they going to handle things in Washington? And it was very interesting because she got very different takes on the election from liberal Adam Smith from the 9th Congressional District, which includes Bellevue, basically up and down the 405 corridor, and a very different take from Kamala Smith. Pramila Jayapal. Adam Smith says the Democrats need to rebrand. He said, I think we need to rethink our policies, our messaging, our politics, and our coalition. He said a fair number of Republicans are gleeful about the election. There's a fair number of Democrats who are deeply freaking out. And then there are a lot of folks on both sides that aren't either gleeful or freaking out. We're just trying to prepare. He says, I think the Democrats need to rethink our policies, messaging, politics, and coalition. He said, I remain concerned that extreme left policies are undermining the Democrats' ability to effectively govern. Again, this is not John Carlson talking. This is Adam Smith, who's been in Congress for 28 years as a Democrat. Our criminal justice system in King County is a disaster. Now, my argument is it's a disaster by design, because that defund the police and the police abolition movement and prison abolition movement has far greater influence on policy decisions in this country and this state than most people realize. He is especially furious with the county's criminal diversion programs for people charged with certain crimes that allow defendants to avoid incarceration by working with community organizations. He says programs like those have no transparency and no accountability. Nina Shapiro then asked Congressman Adam Smith, it seems voters have given a message about border security. They want a tougher approach. Would you agree? Adam Smith says, absolutely. Allowing too many immigrants to come in was a huge problem, and the voters want that reduced. He says he doesn't believe that voters want all undocumented immigrants in the country deported. He says he advocates for a middle ground, one that reduces chaos at the border, but recognizes that illegals are vital to the economy and broader society. Okay, so that's Adam Smith. Here's Pramila Jayapal. She's asked, what's the mood in D.C. like? She said, well, it's obviously not the way we had hoped. But she says, we do have some temporary leverage for the first few months. So we're pushing the Senate to confirm as many judges as they can get through, pushing the National Labor Relations Board to appoint new members of that board. And then she's asked, let's stay on immigration. Border security is something that resonated with voters. How are you responding? Pramila Jayapal says, I don't think border security on its own without reforms of the legal immigration system will solve the problem. In other words, let people in, regularize them, give them a pathway to citizenship. And then to her credit, Nina Shapiro from The Times said, I spoke with Adam Smith, who said the extreme left has taken over the Democratic Party. What has your introspection led you to? She says that is just not accurate. If you look at the data, what you see is the reason Kamala Harris lost is because in blue states across the country, our base did not turn out. Democrats got fewer votes than before because we went too far to the right. We didn't show a clear contrast. We didn't show we were angry about the fact that people's working wages haven't increased over the last 30 years and all of the benefits of the economy are going to the wealthiest. She says, you know, which is odd because they own the economy. They own inflation. It happened on their watch under their policies.
Yeah, this was like 6 months before Bidenomics was saving everybody, right?
Yeah, but again, then she goes on to say, we didn't make it clear that the Democratic Party is still a party of peace, not war. Well, what's Ukraine? Who's pushing Ukraine? Regarding the Middle East, the only way to have peace in Israel is to get rid of Hamas, because Hamas makes it clear that they're making war permanently whenever they have a chance on Israel. So they're against Israel winning that war. That does not make them the party of peace. That makes them the party of Hamas. So again, there's Pramila Jayapal, who does chair the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And she says the reason they lost is, we went too far to the right, and our base was upset, so they stayed home. My guess is that in this tug of war that is going to happen, and these two personify it perfectly. Adam Smith was a moderate Democrat. Then he became a liberal Democrat. He was all for the Pramila Jayapal $15 minimum wage. He was against Obamacare. Then he was for it. So he went to the left. Now he's coming back to the right, he's coming back toward the center, I should say. He's going rightward from left to the center, because he simply sees that it's a political disaster for them. So a response from some of our listeners to Elizabeth Warren, essentially justifying, rationalizing at least, the hit on insurance executive Brian Thompson. Again, Elizabeth Warren, like Pramila Jayapal, she's out there on the left, the progressive left, and they are right now the loudest voices in their party, and they have apparently learned nothing from the election. It is coming up on 8:48, 12 minutes to 9 o'clock this Thursday, December 12th edition, the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show. This would be your worst Christmas song ever. O Come, O Ye Faithful, as performed by Twisted Sister. Wow. Man, oh man, this is bad.
Special level here.
Okay.
I'd give him some figgy pudding.
And I think we got a hat tip KVI listener that suggested this one. Michael and Graham?
Yes.
Michael and Graham.
Thank you, Michael, but we're going to start losing ratings if we don't immediately pivot here.
Twisted Sister got a little royalty check and go, huh? Someone really played it, huh?
Why did someone play this? We've been trying to get people to forget that song. Anyway, to the phones we go. Senator Elizabeth Warren reacted to the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson by saying, well, violence is never the answer, but people can only be pushed so far. This is a warning that if you push people hard enough, they lose faith in the ability of the government to make change and start to take matters into their own hands in ways that will ultimately be a threat to everyone. The blowback has been severe. She's now scrambling to undo the damage. But before we get there, Joey, Auburn.
Yeah, hey, John. I was just thinking the government pushed too far. And they had Jan 6, and that, you know, when you push that far, you do have a response, don't you? She can't see that the government's been pushing too far either.
Yeah, it's only corporations that can push too far.
Correct.
And if you lash out, well, then you're sending a message to corporate America. I hope they receive that message. But or when you burn down a business during a riot, well, the people, you know, rioting is the voice of people unheard. But
yeah, last I looked, I have the choice of which corporations I would like to choose to give my money to,
yeah,
opposed to the government. They just beat you down.
But when people riot against the government, well, then that's a threat to democracy itself. Yes, that's
correct.
As if you kill a CEO, well, it's terrible, but people can only be pushed too far. If you dare attack a politician, well, then you're attacking democracy itself. The inconsistency there is obvious. All right. Thank you very much. And this was another nominee for worst Christmas song.
Honorable mention.
All the time we have for now. Let's talk again tomorrow on Friday, the Commute with Carlson, Friday the 13th edition of the John Carlson Show. Have a great one.